It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
All right, hour number two of The Drive underway here on Fan Run Radio. Top 4 at 4 this afternoon, brought to you by David Britt and his team at Volunteer State Insurance Brokers. Check them out online, volunteerstateinsurance.com. Number one, NBA players will receive their full checks when they next payday for most of them arrives on April 15th, even though no games will have been played for more than a month at that point. The NBA gave teams the directive today in a memo that was obtained by ESPN. The league and the National Basketball Players Association have been in talks for weeks about the status of salaries during the NBA shutdown. Last games that were played were on March 11th. That's the day that Rudy Gobert became the first NBA player to test positive for the coronavirus. What do you think, Trey? NBA players, a lot of Americans out there hurting, a lot of hourly workers, a lot of folks working at or below the poverty line who have lost their jobs. But the NBA will be handing out game checks for games that were not played.
I just think it's something that the NBA does not want to get into a battle with the Players Association. I mean, if you take away their checks, think about, you know, the ramifications that would bring upon with the association towards the NBA and the backlash that it received there. Look, it's already not a good relationship, so do you really want to make it worse? I mean, if they're not playing in May, that's when you start maybe holding back a paycheck.
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out, like, if we had to shut down the radio station for a month and we weren't doing the drive, we weren't doing any of these shows, like, I don't know that we would be getting paid, and I don't know that I necessarily have a problem with that. I mean, it would suck, but I don't know, man. It must be nice to be a millionaire and have your paycheck still come even though your work has been stopped. Just doesn't seem like a world most of us can identify with.
I kind of agree with you.
A whopping 88% of Football Bowl subdivision athletics directors want an expanded college football playoff when the current playoff contract ends after the 2025 regular season. This according to a survey conducted by Stadium Sports. Of those athletics directors who favored an expanded playoff, 72% believe 8 teams should qualify. Also, 66% of the ADs said the highest ranked non-Power 5 team should receive an automatic bid to an expanded playoff. What do you guys think? 2026, will we be seeing an 8-team college football playoff with an automatic non-Power 5 team receiving at least one bid?
Well, I'm thinking if they're going to do it, just go and do it now. This is a great time to reset a lot of stuff. You know? Do it after this coming up season. Just start it in 2021.
I'm absolutely for it. Should be, and I think 8 teams is the right way to do it. For I know a lot of people.
Perfect.
Hey, listen, I'm the more football, the better, as far as I'm concerned. 16 teams in the FCS has worked in that for years, but it feels like 8. I mean, it's just it feels like it's a nice number for this. With 5 power conferences, the championship teams get in. You got 2 at-large teams and 1 non-power 5 team. That would be a lot of fun, you know?
Hell yeah, it would. Have the first round games on campus. That'd be incredible, dude. Can you imagine hosting a playoff game at Neyland Stadium? How much fun that'd be?
Yeah, got to get there first. Got some work to do. Number 3, no Masters this week. But if it had been played at Augusta National, Tiger Woods says he would have been there in good health and ready to go. Woods, who has not competed since February 16th at the Genesis Invitational and missed at least 2 tournaments that he normally would have played, told Golf TV that he has been using the time away due to the virus pandemic to his advantage, says he's been playing a lot at home and feels healthy. So presumably, if he can stay healthy, we'll see Tiger Woods in November at Augusta.
I mean, I know he lives on one, but does he have his, I mean, is he just able to roll out of bed and walk outside and play 18 holes whenever he wants?
Well, he says, fortunately, Medalist Golf Club is still open where he lives. Virtually every course to the south of us is closed, but we remain open, so it's nice to go out there and hit some golf balls a little bit. I'd imagine if you're a golf club and you're able to be open at all, or even if you're not open, so if you run a golf club and you've closed and Tiger Woods calls up, his agent calls and says, yeah, Tiger wants to come and play around, I think you go ahead and open up, don't you?
Yeah, I would.
And finally, number four this afternoon, Bob Dylan's latest single, Murder Most Foul. Remember, we talked about this last week on the show. Bob Dylan releasing a 17-minute ballad about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. His first original song in 8 years. It's also now the folk rock icon's first number one hit on a Billboard chart. Song debuted at number one on the Rock Digital Song Sales Survey with 10,000 downloads in its first week. It was streamed 1.8 million times in the United States. How about that?
That's pretty wild. That's his first number one?
Yeah, it's shocking, right?
Yeah, considering the songs he's written and the... I wonder if that counts. Has he ever had a number one of his song somebody else covered?
I mean, maybe All Along the Watchtower or
that didn't go to number
like
one.
That's the best known Dylan cover, right?
Either that or Like a Rolling Stone.
Who did the best Like a Rolling Stone cover?
Hendrix Live at Monterey. And he's out of his head on acid or something. He talks to Bob Dylan, talks about Bob Dylan's grandma at the beginning of it. I think she's in the audience.
Really?
Yeah, you never listened to that? I had an old, got it on vinyl when I was at UT at the Student Center. And I'm pretty sure it was a bootleg, but it was a double side. One side was a Hendrix set from Monterey, and the other side was Otis Redding.
Most of the Hendrix live stuff, and you know me, I'm a huge Hendrix guy, but most of his live stuff I've found to be kind of a rough listen. The Woodstock thing that everybody goes crazy over, I can't listen to that. That's just
yeah.
Noise. I mean, it's awful.
Go back and see if you can't find Hendrix Live at Monterey. That was when he really broke big here in America. That whole set he did up there was incredible. So Woodstock, he was out of his gourd.
The Bandit Gypsies live at the Fillmore East. That's the best Hendrix live stuff. For my money.
That's probably the best lineup he ever had, wouldn't you say?
Billy Cox on bass and Buddy Miles on the drums.
It was Buddy Miles on drums?
Yeah.
I thought he still had...
Mitchell. No.
Mitch Mitchell? Yeah.
The Band of Gypsies was Hendrix, Billy Cox, and Buddy Miles.
You know, I've heard Clapton and a lot of those old guys like that swear up and down Mitch Mitchell's the best drummer out of all of them in the 60s. He was just incredible. Very underrated.
Trey, do you have any thoughts on live Hendrix?
No, not at all. I've seen his performance. I've YouTubed that performance at Woodstock, but no, I don't know.
You're a big JFK conspiracy guy, aren't you, Trey?
What's that have to do with Jimi Hendrix?
I talk about the Dylan's number one.
Yeah, I mean,
who do you think did it?
Weird.
Who do you think did it?
I think it was more than one person.
You think it's the Cubans or the mob?
I mean, Kevin Costner put up a good point that it could be the mob. I mean,
Kevin Costner put up. Wait a minute, Trey. What are you doing right now? Are you saying that Kevin Costner actually somewhere said that he thinks it was the mob, or are you just taking the movie JFK and the character that Kevin Costner played in it and acting like that was his point?
Yeah, I'm just taking the character that Kevin Costner played.
I think it was a mob hit. It was because of Bobby.
It was a damn good performance.
The top four this afternoon, brought to you by our friends over at Volunteer State Insurance. David Britt and his team are there for all your insurance need, life insurance, health insurance, whatever it is you need. Hey, man, we all got to be insured, especially at times like these. Call David today at 865-224-3243. That's 224-3243. Just email him, davidbritt@volunteerinsurance.com. Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, Bear. I hate to burst your bubble.
No, he didn't. Couldn't make that. Hey, no. There was somebody on that grassy knoll.
My favorite JFK conspiracy theory was, have you seen the one where they said the driver of the limousine shot him?
No, that's...
What?
That's silly.
Yeah, the driver turned around and blew his brains out.
No.
Oh, that's
silly.
Didn't
they have that on video?
Yeah, there's a picture of it. It's actually, I don't know if it's doctored or not. It probably is, or if it's just the way, you know, it's an old black and white photograph, if it's just some sort of optical illusion. But there's a picture of, like, the driver sticking his arm back, and it looks like he's pointing a gun directly at him.
Well, I think Jackie would be able to probably witness whoever did it then, if that was the case.
Or the governor, Connolly, is sitting right next to him. Or any of the dozens of Secret Service agents that are running next to the vehicle at the time.
I just don't think old boy could have got off a clear shot like that.
Have you ever been there, the Texas School Book Depository?
No.
I've talked to people that have. They say it's eerie, even today.
I'll give you a quick story about that. The first time I went to meet my in-laws, my wife's parents, they live in Fort Worth, but I was at the time I was reading a lot about JFK, and I really wanted to go see Dealey Plaza. And so at the time, future brother-in-law was like, yeah, I'll take you by there on your way out of town to fly back to Knoxville. We had to make a plane at DFW. And so we're running a little bit late, but like he thinks we can make it. So we throw through Dealey Plaza. I get out, take a walk around a little bit, soak it up. And then we ended up getting in. We get to the airport and we realized that we were like an hour late and we weren't going to make our plane. It's the only time I've ever missed a flight. Felt like an idiot.
Because you went to Dealey Plaza?
Do what?
You missed your flight?
I did. It's true.
What did you think about Dealey?
What do you say about it? I'm not going to say it's awesome because, I mean, it's the site of an American tragedy. I went back. I've been back since then, and I went up and took the tour of the book depository and all that. It's wild.
Did they let you look out the window from the show where the shot allegedly took place?
Yeah, they've got, I mean, you can't walk right up to the window, but they've got it. There's like a glass partition and you can kind of stand close enough and kind of look down. And then they've got the point where the first bullet that missed hit the street. There's like an X that marks the spot there. And then, of course, they've got where the the limousine was.
Huh.
Yeah. It's eerie. Tanner Carson, you got something to say about the museum?
Well, yeah, you mentioned the window that Oswald, allegedly fired the shot from. I told you on the group that I went there last July. Me being a big history buff, like you said, Russell, I mean, you can't say it was like a great experience. It was the site of a presidential assassination, but I mean, it's something I would recommend people who are in the area do. But the one thing I will say real quick though about the window, it's all sealed off. You can't get into it. I'll quote one of the late great comedians, Bill Hicks. One of our late great American comedians have been talking about it. They have the window set up to look exactly like it did on that day, and it's very accurate because Oswald is not in it.
Yeah, but nobody disputes that Oswald was up there and shooting, right? I mean, well, I guess somebody probably would dispute it, but you guys don't think that, right? I mean, that's...
No, I just think there's no way there's no way. That's not a one-person deal. The kill shot came from in front of him, not from behind. The kill shot came from the grassy knoll.
And you thought talking about radios, headsets, was going down a crazy path today?
Compared to this, I mean, this is something you can dig into and debate.
I think Oswald acted alone. There's been studies that have shown the kill shot most likely happened from behind. If you look at the Zapruder film, you see the spray goes out the front of his head.
Zapruder film.
Do what?
Keep your blinders on, sheep.
Here's the thing about you conspiracy nuts. You have no physical evidence. All the physical evidence is tied to Lee Harvey Oswald and nobody else. All of it, 100%, not 99% of it, all of it is tied to Oswald. And everything else is just a conspiracy theory. There's no physical evidence that points to anybody else, the mob, the FBI, the CIA, somebody on the grassy knoll, like none of it. It's all theory, right? There's no physical evidence.
Well, no. I mean, they completely covered it. It was a complete and total cover-up. I mean, they got Jack Ruby to murder Lee Harvey Oswald in the garage of the Dallas jail, and they got it all covered up.
I'm not
certain who did it in my mind, but there's some, solid theories out there. I just think the mafia had him whacked.
Well, let me ask you this. If it were the mafia and they hired Oswald and or others to do the deed, don't you think, knowing what you've watched and read enough mafia stuff, don't you think they would have had a car waiting to pick up Oswald and his co-conspirators as soon as the deed was done and take them either A, somewhere far away so that they could get away, or B, somewhere where they would shoot them and bury the bodies?
Well, who's to say that wasn't what the plan was, but Oswald got caught, and then Jack Ruby, they had Jack Ruby kill him, and Ruby died quickly after that,
Who had Jack Ruby kill him?
I think Ruby died of, like, cancer or something.
Yeah.
So.
But who are you alleging had Jack Ruby kill Oswald?
Whoever put the contract out on Kennedy. Members of organized crime in the U.S. that helped Kennedy get elected, and then, he turned his brother Bobby loose on him. I mean, that's historical fact, Russ. You can look that up.
I don't need to look it up. I know what you're talking about.
I mean, but, they helped him get elected, then he turned his brother loose on him.
Let's get Phil in here, then we'll pause for the cause and bring in friend of the show, Nick Bromberg of Yahoo Sports this afternoon. Phil, you're on the drive, Fan Run Radio.
Boys, R.W.
What do you say, Philly?
I like these hypotheticals to go from Steve Forbes, Buck Pearl, and Rick Barnes to Oswald and Kennedy. It's kind of cool,
Have you listened to Bob Dylan's 17-minute song about it yet, Phil?
I can't stand Bob Dylan.
Not a big Dylan guy.
I think he's got a horrible voice. He might be great in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but, you know, I got better things out of here. So what's the question of the day again?
Would you, on the year anniversary that we learned that Rick Barnes was flirting with UCLA, would you go ahead and kick Slick Rick to the curb and hire Steve Forbes, knowing everything that we know now?
No, but I would rehire Buck Pearl.
You would fire Rick Barnes to hire Bruce Pearl right now?
Yeah, why not? Well, it's all hypothetical because Fulmer would never hire Buck Pearl. Anybody that's a threat to Fulmer would never be able to be on the campus.
Yeah, sure, it's a hypothetical, but you know, I think that it's a thing where Rick Barnes has tremendous momentum in his program right now. He has a tremendous roster coming back next year, and there are high expectations. And I feel pretty good about it. I certainly understand those who would say Rick Barnes has not covered himself in glory in the tournament, but I'm just a firm believer, as we've talked many times, Phil, if you keep knocking on that door long enough, eventually you're going to knock it down.
Well, I hope we do. I mean, these next 2 years will tell. I think there's not many windows of opportunity for Rick Barnes. He's getting up there in age, and if he don't do something these next couple of years, then it's never going to happen. But I do not want Philip Fulmer making a basketball coaching change. We'll be set back 30 years if that happens. Like under the Lady of Isles, I don't know if that's ever going to work out. The Holly Jolly thing, it looks to me like that's just a complete fiasco.
But don't you feel like Fulmer is such a football guy? I think with the Kelly Harper hire, I think that he more or less allowed the women's basketball family over there to make that hire. I think he certainly pulled the trigger and approved of it, but I think he did what the longtime Lady Vol folks wanted to happen. And I think that if Rick Barnes had taken that job last year with everything that was going on at football at the time, like, I think Fulmer would have been involved in the hire for sure, but I think he would have leaned on Tennessee basketball people that he knows to kind of
really
make a recommendation.
You really think that? I mean, Fulmer's got more to worry. I mean, he's got worried about Jeremy Pruitt succeeding because if Jeremy Pruitt don't decease, he'll go down in flames with Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, it's still – I don't even think – it's 50-50 if Jeremy Pruitt's a success here. I mean, you got Gitmo in year three. That shows to me this program is – if Jeremy Pruitt's such a great recruit, where's our quarterback of the future?
It all comes back full circle. Bear, do you think Philip Fulmer, if he had to make a basketball hire, would have done so – Dave Hart style, just unilaterally, or do you think he would have leaned on experts in the industry?
I don't know about in the industry. I think he would have probably reached out to the same people when Bruce Pearl was hired. He would have gone to the, you know, Tennessee people.
Mike
Tennessee
Hamilton?
Basketball people.
Ernie Grunfeld?
Maybe.
Lord. They don't want anything to overshadow football over there, Bear. You know what I know.
No, I'm not as, you know, black helicopter about that as you are.
I mean, as mediocre as basketball has been up and down, it's been better than football the last 20 years, and I don't want to see basketball go back to where it was in the late Houston era.
Well, we're a long way away from that, man.
No, but all it takes is one bad hire, and you're right back there.
Yeah, but I don't attribute all these, you know, nefarious, you know. I can't see Philip Fulmer intentionally making a bad hire. He's going to hire – he would hire somebody good, Phil. He's not going to hire somebody just to bring him in here to destroy Tennessee basketball. That's crazy talk. Come on, man.
No, it's not. Look at the history.
Yeah, it is. That's your hatred of Phil Fulmer going back to the Johnny Majors thing spilling over.
In all honesty, the football coaches haven't been any better either about hiring. I mean, look what these clowns have hired up here lately. Butch Jones and Derek Dooley.
I mean, it was Dave Hart.
Now, you know who hired him? Haslam. See you.
Real breath of sunshine there, wasn't he, Russ?
I mean, I just think, Bear, if the mafia is involved, they're going to have a car with a guy waiting on Oswald right outside the school book depository on the other side. They're going to drive him to some foggy marsh somewhere, put a bullet in the back of his head, and you never hear from him again. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Quick timeout. When we continue, Nick Bromberg of Yahoo Sports is going to join us. We'll talk a little college football with him when we continue right here on The Drive. Thank you. I'm Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith, Bear, Trey Wallace. I'll cruise along with you here on a Thursday afternoon edition of The Drive as we approach the bottom of your 4 o'clock hour. Pleased to be joined now by Nick Bromberg of Yahoo Sports. Good afternoon, Nick. How are you, sir?
What's going on, guys? Trying to enjoy the sunshine here. It's one of those things where it's like, I feel like I have to get outside when it's sunny, at least an hour a day, to not have cabin fever.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, if you're looking for silver linings and like unintended consequences, I have spent more time outdoors these past 3 weeks than maybe the 3 years before that.
It's unbelievable how many people we have seen out and about walking the dog now compared to when before all this started. And I was joking on Twitter last night. I think it's absolutely true. You know, one of the industries that's coming back in a big way here because of this is sidewalk chalk. That is the new thing to do, is write on your sidewalk and your driveway with sidewalk chalk.
Yeah, I had yesterday in the neighborhood, they were going to list all the presidents. And it was like 40, what do we have, like 46 presidents? And I could tell they got up to like 14, and then they're like, yeah, this is taking way too long, and they quit. But it was a cool idea. The thing I've noticed, Nick, is now that everybody's out walking, like in my neighborhood, we have a nice sidewalk, and usually like you don't encounter anybody on it. But now that everybody's out walking, like I always pass by other people, and so you see the person coming and you're like, okay, what's the procedure here? Do I need to get off into the grass or into the street to give this person their distance, or should I wait for them to get out and get over to the side for me? What is your method for dealing with that encounter?
I'm the proactive one. So I've been having this internal debate. I'm glad you bring this up, because I'm not the only one that has this internal debate every time. When I could typically go for a run, it's like 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. And so generally there's a lot of people out now and about when the weather's nice. And so I'm always slowly or way out in the grass, because especially if it's a group of people, I'm the one making the move. And I'm like, all right, I'll go ahead and do it, because I don't want to be the person that comes, you know, within 2 or 3 feet, because you never want to be that person who looks like they're not taking social distancing all that seriously.
Yeah, but the thing that you're dealing with in your head is, man, this person, this stranger in my neighborhood, is going to think that I think they've got the virus. They're going to think that, and they're probably thinking the same thing about you. And so it's just one of those things. I'm the same way. I'm proactive. I go ahead and get a full, like, I'm not even 6 feet. I'm like 10 feet. I don't want to be near you, man. And like, I don't even want to drift into the draft of the air that you're leaving behind. I leave it like, I don't even get back on the sidewalk for another 20 or 30 feet until I'm past you. That's how paranoid and delusional I am about it.
No, I'm right with you. I'm the person, you know, while we went to the store on Monday, we went to several stores just to get what we needed for the week, basically, for all of our at-home projects and some groceries. And I'm the guy taking the hand sanitizer and the Lysol wipes into the store, wiping everything down.
Oh, yeah.
I have been surprised at how good I have been at consciously not touching my face in public places. I mean, I was like one of the people that at first I was like, oh man, I touch my face a lot. But then I've become really good at, you know, not doing it when I'm reminding myself not to do it.
Do you get a weird feeling of anxiety when you're at the store? I'm the same way. I'm taking the wipes in and I'm maintaining distance and all that stuff. But I also, particularly towards the end when I'm in line and I'm waiting for my chance to go up to the checkout thing, like I'm a nervous wreck, Nick. I'm like thinking, oh my God, I can't wait to get out of here. Now I got to touch the button thing and bag and get out of here. And it's just, it's a whole, I feel like I need to pop a Xanax every time before I pull up in the parking lot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Does Knoxville have Menards? Is Menards a thing in Tennessee?
No.
Okay, so Menards is like, for anybody who is uninitiated, it's like Home Depot, Lowe's, also combined with Walmart and a grocery store. I mean, it's the only place that I know of that you can buy like fencing and lumber and sump pumps and plumbing and paint, but then you can also still get your hygiene products, and you can get coffee and milk and pop, and you can't get beer. But it's this Midwestern conglomeration of places, and so you know, that's a good one-stop shop for this stuff. But Menards, they have the cashiers on the same side that you are. So basically, you kind of park your cart, and the cashier is, like, right next to you. And you don't have that much room to move. So I'm the person at Menards, and like, trying to inch my way around the cashier as wide as possible. It's like, you know, I don't want to be running right by you because we're supposed to keep 6 feet here.
Well, Nick, I'm sure Ryan Blaney is happy that Menards is staying busy.
I tell John Wood this. He and I tweet back and forth. I'm like, you know, I'm keeping Menards in business here because I'm going for all the home improvement projects that I have now that there are no sports and I'm stuck at home. Plus, I'm getting my groceries. I am making my one Menards trip a week, taking daily precautions, and it is essential because, you know, they do sell food. So that way I can buy food there because we have to eat, you know.
Nick, when you look at, so the NBA announced today that they're going to pay players April 15th. You look at the NFL draft that's still going to go on. You've seen this Major League Baseball proposals that they're talking about playing in Arizona. You look at college football talk and even NASCAR too. If there's something in the past 2 weeks that has made you take a second look at some of these proposals, or what they're trying to do, what's the biggest thing in sports that has stood out to you over the last 2 to 4 weeks?
You know, I think what has stood out to me, and I think it's in a good way, are the feedback that the Major League Baseball idea has gotten, and the fact that Mike Gundy's rant Tuesday, monologue, whatever you want to call it, has got such a swift response to. I think the overwhelming majority of people realizing that the baseball idea of quarantining players for potentially up to 4.5 months away from their own families, doing that to human beings, no matter if they're making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars, may not be the best idea. And then especially on the college football way that people started laughing at Mike Gundy's 20-minute monologue and his crazy ideas for getting the Big 12 or for getting Oklahoma State starting football again. Like, okay, you know, we're all in the same boat here, and no one has any idea when everything's coming back. I applaud baseball for examining all series in the NBA. I don't think there's a right answer, and I certainly don't think the Arizona idea where basically they're sequestering players in a hotel room is the right answer. I think that's something, you know, you got to knock off the board. But at the same time, you know, also too, I'm going to throw this out there, I have been absolutely blasting my face off at NFL coaches making such a big deal of this virtual draft. It's like, guys, have you ever done an online fantasy football draft before? This really shouldn't be this complicated, all these complaints that are being leaked out.
No, I agree with you. And then, you know, we look at college football. Like, I'm not hating on Adam Schefter, but he puts out a tweet a second ago, I don't know, about 10 minutes ago, Nick, that pretty much says that he said that speaking to people around college football, there's strong conviction there will be college football this season. It's like you're not breaking any kind of news. Like this is what colleges are trying to do. It's just all about, and I love your opinion on this, the liability legally, civil suit wise, medically, of bringing kids back on campus, student athletes, and then potentially not having the rest of the student body there. You know, would you agree that it would only take one case from one player around the country to put this thing up in a whirlwind, right? I mean, I don't get it.
Oh, absolutely. It just takes one. Just as we saw with the NBA, it just took one, and the NBA started all of this in motion in mid-March with Rudy Gobert. So, you know, I understand why there is this quote-unquote strong conviction. I mean, we all know this. We all know that college football, Phil Fulmer wants to play at Tennessee. Everyone wants to play across the board because we all know just how much the financial aspect of college football keeps everyone else afloat, especially in the time that your schools are getting basically half the payout, less than that, of what they would have gotten from the NCAA from the NCAA tournament. We all understand that. They're going to figure out a way to play a college football season. It's probably not going to be perfect. It's probably not going to start on Labor Day weekend. I mean, it's going to be a miracle if it starts on Labor Day weekend with fans in the stands. I don't think that's going to happen. If it starts on Labor Day weekend, there may not be fans. But, again, you got to have kids on campus first. And when you have commissioners like Bob Bolton at the Big 12 basically unequivocally saying, hey, look, you know, there is no – without class, there is no college football – there's your starting point, and you got to start working back from there. And so, you know, and you also have to look at this too from the perspective of, you know, student athlete welfare. I saw that you tweeted this out today earlier, and I wrote something on it too about Wisconsin. They have decided, for anybody who has not seen that, Wisconsin has told basically 35 athletes, but it's still 35 athletes, have told those spring sports seniors that, hey, you know what, peace out. If you're graduating, go do something else. And I'm afraid Wisconsin's just going to be the first of who knows how many schools that do this, and that really sucks for these seniors, and I really hope the NCAA can figure out a way to make this right because, you know, no one, if the NCAA give players the opportunity to come back for 2021 season, they should not be done by their schools this way, especially if the NCAA wants to keep pushing the propaganda that the health and well-being of all students, as students, comes first before the athletic part.
Nick, last thing, we'll let you go. And as always, we realize that, you know, this thing is changing from day to day as far as what the prognostication in the sports world is going to be. I feel better, much better today about having college football in the fall than I did a week ago. I'm still not, you know, sold that it's 100% or even better than 50-50 at this point, but I do feel better. Last week, it seemed like a long shot, and it does feel like some of the projections we're seeing, the worst-case scenarios are softening.
Yeah, you know, I do too, and I also think too, you know, we got to keep harping on people that if you want sports to happen in the fall, you want baseball to start soon, if you want to have some sort of semblance of an NBA, NHL playoffs, keep doing what you're doing and take this seriously and stay apart. The further we stay apart, you know, the longer we are now starting because we all 3 weeks ago had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. We're now finally is working. If we keep doing that, maybe, just maybe, these kids can actually get back onto campus on August 1st, start practicing, and then we will potentially have a season. I think John Sharp may be onto something by saying, hey, look, we could potentially even start the season in October and still play all 12, 13 weeks if we need to. I think there's options. I think they're going to get it done in some way, shape, or form. But this is truly the one time where a fan can have a tangible impact on a sporting event by, if we all do our part, I do think sports will come back much sooner than we realize and think in a worst case scenario. But again, that's only if we all do our part.
All right, good stuff. You can follow him on Twitter at Nick Bromberg. He's with Yahoo Sports. Nick, thanks, man. Always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for having me. Everybody stay safe. summer, and hopefully we can be talking about real sports again here real soon.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you, Nick. We got to take a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be back to wrap up hour number two of the show coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Drive continues. Russell Smith, Trey Wallace, Bear, Tanner Carson, all with you and at your service on this Thursday afternoon edition of the show. We've got your top five at five coming up here in about 12 minutes. And it is going to be interesting to see what kind of big societal changes happen when we do get back to work as a country and as a world. Dr. Anthony Fauci said yesterday at the daily White House press briefing concerning the ongoing COVID-19 crisis that he thinks we should never shake hands when all this is said and done. He thinks we should just go ahead and get rid of it. Do you guys think that's even possible in America?
It could be highly possible. After we've all, you know, gotten away from it.
I think it's
it wouldn't
going
bother
to
me
be
a bit.
I think you're gonna have to do it. Like when we start, because I don't think you can just flip the switch and say, all right, May 1st, everybody goes back to work. Like I just don't think it's gonna be like that, man. Like we're gonna have to take care of our older folks and make sure that they continue to be isolated until we get a vaccine, and then we're going to have to ease back into this thing. And part of that to me is, maybe we're going back to work, but we're going to give everybody their space. We're going to give you distance, and we're not going to shake hands, man. We're not going to touch each other. And, you know, we're just going to have to do that until we get some sort of a vaccine and we can move beyond this. Then I think that people slowly start shaking hands and, you know, in 10 years, I think we'll be back to normal as far as those customs is concerned. But for the short term, Trey, I think that we are going to have to stop doing that.
No, I haven't been around folks much in the last 4 weeks, if any, besides the grocery store last 3 weeks. So I don't even know what it's like to shake a hand right now. Like I just think I'll continue doing. Here's the cool thing. I think the fist bump comes back now, and it's appropriate in business settings, in you know, big time corporate companies. You don't have to shake hands anymore. You can just do the fist bump. I think that's really neat.
It is strange
that still involves touching hands. We don't need to touch hands. I don't care if it's your knuckles or what. We all need to go get away from touching our hands. Together.
You want to do an air high five or something?
No, I'll just say, good afternoon, how are you? You know, it's verbal. I'm very anti-handshaking to begin with.
What about a chest bump?
No, Trey. You're not going to want to get up in somebody's grill after this. I'm not. I mean, just think
first
about
time
what
I
you're
see
saying.
You, Bear, right when I see you, Bear, the first time, whenever that is, in a couple months, I'm going to say hello, and I'm going to give you a nice slap on the ass.
Yeah, and then you'll wake up whatever, span of time later and be like, what the hell happened? Last thing I remember was I thought it'd be a good idea to touch Bear's ass. Your jaw's going to hurt really bad. I'm going to feel really bad.
No, you won't. I do think it's interesting. When did the fist bump, like, that wasn't a thing before. Where did that come from? Like, that maybe mid-90s or something, we started the fist bump, and that very well could. I think Trey might be right. I mean, that might replace the handshake in not just business, but just American society in general.
That defeats the whole purpose. I'm back to my original argument. 30 seconds.
I get what you're saying, Bear.
In touching hands with me, Russell.
Okay, I am listening to you, dude. Calm down, first of all. Chill. Second of all, I understand what you're saying. It's still not completely healthy, but you would have to agree, as a matter of degree, it's healthier than we touch the front of our hands and then we sit down and eat a meal. Like, the fist bump is better. It might not be perfect, but it's better.
Yeah, but neither one of them are necessary for us to sit down and have a meal. That's the whole point of all this.
Tanner, you found the origin of the fist bump?
The origin?
I just went on Wikipedia. I mean, according to the article, there's a couple of origins, I guess. Here, let me look it up again. The first two it mentions, it traces it back to the 70s, probably. It says the modern gesture may have arisen spontaneously on city basketball courts and was popularized by basketball player Fred Carter in the 1970s. Others trace the gesture to the Wonder Twins, minor characters from the 70s Hanna-Barbera superhero cartoon Super Friends, who touched knuckles and cried, "Wonder Twin powers activate."
Yep.
The Wonder Twins.
Form of an ice wall. They'd say what they wanted to form. Now you're in my wheelhouse talking to Hanna-Barbera. Greatest cartoons ever.
Some say Baseball Hall of Famer Stan Musial used the fist bump during the 1950s as an alternative to shaking hands. Musial was convinced that he was catching too many colds by picking up germs while shaking thousands of hands each year, so he adopted the fist bump as a friendly alternative. Stan the man! How about that?
Now, I remember, like, bumping forearms in baseball back in the 70s. In early 80s.
See, I remember
I thought it was a baseball thing.
Mark McGuire and Jose Canseco doing it in the 80s was the first time I remember it.
The Bass Brothers. Yeah, that's how I remember it.
Have you guys watched those shorts on Netflix?
No. Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Oh, Bear, you got to watch it, man. It's hysterical.
I'm working my way through Peyton's Places right now.
I think the funniest one of those is Peyton trying to throw the football off that building in New York to Chris Carter. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, Carter caught him.
Yeah, all he does is catch touchdowns. Stay with us. Hour number three of The Drive coming up. We'll get your top five at five when we continue right here on Fan Run Radio. Stay tuned. Hour number three of the show coming up.